Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and it's 2015. Happy New Year! I am so excited for the first show of the year because I always get to have a bit of a fangirl moment where I have on a guest that is a personal favorite of mine. And today, I am so happy that Sherry Payne is here. And I have followed Sherry's work since, I don't know, forever, since I first started knowing what a quilt was and found her, because I love her work, I love her style, and you are going to enjoy this. Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Hi, Pat. You are way too sweet.
Well,
great introduction,
true.
By the way.
It is true. I don't know. I think I've collected a lot of your things and made them, and it's just, I just love your style. You work in a primitive style, which really speaks to my heart. That's my applique love, is that style, that primitive style. How long, you've had your pattern business a long time. When did you start?
I bought an existing quilt store in 1989. Mm. I had it for a year. When I had bought it, it was not financially sound. That's why they were selling it.
Mm.
And so when I bought it, I let it go for a year, but it just really wasn't paying his bills very well. So, you know, I'm ordering all these patterns, lots of things, and I'm always drawn, I've always doodled, I've always done all these things. So I said, you know what, let me give you a stab. Maybe I can just do this. I can make some patterns and have something that I can sell in the store that will mm-hmm. make some extra money that I don't have to put out money to make money.
Smart woman.
And that's how it all got started. So,
you know,
and I went to my first quilt market, and that was actually the first place that I got spied, and I just kind of stood out of the crowd because I was just a little bit different at the time. Right place, you know how they say, mm-hmm. right place, right time. And the rest is history. I just kind of took off with both toll painting and the quilting. Mm-hmm. Let the toll painting go after a few years because I realized fabric was my niche. Mm-hmm. I, you know, done so much art in various styles all over my lifetime, and just realized fabric was where it was at. I didn't want to leave that.
Your style has probably changed. I think we talked about this a little bit in the email, that it's changed a little bit, but it stayed mm-hmm. pretty core. It stayed pretty core to like a folk art. Describe like the difference, because it started out maybe a little more country, and now it's really
right.
truly a primitive look. Can you tell
right.
me what that difference is?
I think when I started, country was definitely in,
mm-hmm.
but it was a little bit more country cute. So mm-hmm. being as I wanted to make money, I let myself be within what mm-hmm. was going to sell at that time.
Right.
As I have evolved over the years, I've let my soul, my gut, my inner person speak to me more and more and more, and the rest just kind of slowly fell away, and I became much more of a folk artist than a country person.
Mm-hmm.
I see country as cute, as sweet colors, as but still a little bit perfect, and
mm-hmm.
I see the primitive as much more folk art and guttural, the darker colors, everything's much more misshapen, and you just kind of, it really has that make-do look to it. Anything goes.
Anything goes. You know, I think a perfect example is I showed your gingerbread men
uh-huh.
Table mat, because I think that's just a perfect example of the difference between what would be, if those gingerbread men would be more perfectly shaped, rounded arms, more perfect body of a gingerbread cookie, which is that their granddaughter is making those cute little
yes.
gingerbread cookies in that
well,
pose.
Even our cookies were a little bit on the primitive
yeah.
style.
And that's your November 30th, 2014 post for those listening down the road. You can go back to Sherry's site.
Yeah.
But that's a really good example.
That is, and it is a free giveaway. I love to share, too. So I will often put different quilts and things on my blog that I just give you, you know, the cutting directions and whatever, and let you enjoy and make it. And you don't have to, you know, pay any money to get it. I just like to give things away.
You are just amazing. Tell me a little bit about fabric, because, you know, you've owned a store. You don't still own a store, do you?
No, I do not. I had my store for 12 years.
Right.
And then I had big life changes, got divorced, let the store go, walked away from everything, started all over again. That's when I started even building myself more as the true primitive quilter than I am now, because I just kind of let everything else go and said, I'm only going to do what talks to me. And so, and that's where all of that became more apparent. But when I go by fabric, because I sew mostly scrappy, which is what I truly, I just love it. That's just how my mind sees things. It's what my eye sees. When I buy fabric, I buy anything and everything. It could be the brightest orange, or it could be the blackest black, but it's as long as something in the color, the print, the style, something talks to me and says, this is going to be in a quilt someday, I will buy it. But I only purchase everything in half-yard cuts.
Oh.
And the reason I do that, and I don't know if I did it specifically, but now I do it purposely, is that when it comes to, say, I'm finishing a quilt and it comes to putting a border on, I have never gone to a store with my quilt top and said, let me try out different fabrics so that all four sides of my border match. If I lay it on my floor and I have all my fabrics around me and I say, oh, this one looks good, but heck, now I've run out because I only have a quarter of a yard of this one that I like. So I'm going to find something else that looks nice with it, and I'm going to continue and scrap the border up. And I do that purposely so that I don't have the choice to make it more perfect. I have to make do.
Ah, I like that. You know, I get a little control freaky though, Sherry. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I like that fabric a lot. I need 3 yards. So you don't ever do that?
I never do that. The only time I will allow myself to buy more is if it's possibly a black, which black sometimes can be hard to find, and I just love it and know that a half a yard, even if it's 2-inch pieces, is gonna, I'm going to go through it so fast that I will allow myself to buy 1 yard. But I could go out there and spend, buy 40 half-yard cuts instead of 6 fabrics at 3 yards each.
Right. And, you know, that does make a really spectacular quilt. I mean, and that's what I love about your pieces, is finding that's like little surprises, isn't it? Like looking and seeing all these different things.
And the other thing I do to keep everything scrappy is I have a lot of fabric, but I almost have a lot of it that is just scraps that I save from everything that I do. And when I come home, I take probably about a 4-inch piece. I tear it off the end of every single fabric that I just bought and throw it in my scrap bin because I mostly work from those bins. So those new things that I bought are integrated in with the old things, but I don't as often go to my new pile to draw out. So it's automatically already in there in a scrappy form.
Now, are you sorting those bins in any way, or do you just have this massive bucket in the middle of your studio?
I have a massive bucket. I even sew from the trash can. I thought about yesterday I was sewing, and I made 2 different quilt tops that I actually finished, and one was just a two-toned, you know, just a red and a white. And the other ones were scrappy. And what happened was, is the first thing that happened was I was doing one that was hearts that was a template piece. And I inverted the template pieces when I was sewing them together. Instead of the right being the left, the left became the right. And as I was putting this heart top onto the bottom, I realized, even before I could tell, okay, this is wonky, and this is obviously wasn't where it was supposed to go. All I did was grab something that was on the floor next to me, add it on to where it needed to be, sew it back on and then square the heart up to fit the other hearts. So mm-hmm. it's got this odd little piece in it. Instead of taking all of those pieces apart, re-putting right. them back together in the right way, I just added something to it and then squared it back up, and it was fine. And I can guarantee you if I teach this as a class, everybody's going to see that one heart, and they're purposely going to say, well, how did you get that one little piece right. in there? And they're just going to have to add it in somehow to make it. But it just comes naturally. I just don't stop and say, I'm going to take this all apart, and I'm going to do it again. I did a block. I started doing blocks. And instead of having my machine set for quarter inch, I forgot. So my machine was larger than a quarter of an inch. Mm-hmm. Did I stop and finish the block and take it apart? No, I didn't take it apart. I finished it, and I'll just add a border to it and make it the same size as the other blocks and still put it in the quilt. And it'll be the one block that everybody will gravitate to.
Yeah. Now, we have this goes very fast, Sherry, so we just have a little bit of time left. But I want to have you tell me one more thing. Do you do a lot of altering of your fabric by either over-dyeing or bleaching?
Yes, I do. I tea-dye everything that I bring home with a mixture of instant tea and instant coffee.
Okay. All right.
I dump all my fabric in there. I tea-dye it even before I work with it. Mm-hmm. And then once my quilt is finished and I do wash it and I dry it, I spray it again with that tea-dye mixture to give it that deeper stained look. Because I like the instant tea. I like the color of it. I like the spottiness of it. But it will not be permanent. So once I wash the quilt, a lot of it leaves, and so I redo it again.
Okay. So I was going to ask you about that, about the washing. So if somebody was dyeing it, do you ever dye it so it's more permanent, or will that tea eventually
some of
it?
I have done it with the Rit dye before to give it an all-over toned down look, but I gravitate towards those, I guess it looks just like the age spots that that the tea dyeing does. And so I think that's what I tend to do mostly. But I have done the other, but I haven't found anything that replaces what I like to do. But I do tea dye all my fabrics when I bring them home, so that way I know what they're going to look like spotted and ugly when I'm sewing with them.
Spotted and ugly. Sherry, you are amazing. This has been so much fun.
Well, good. I'm glad.
And everybody goes to visit Sherry Payne at Quilts by Sherry and quiltsbysherry.blogspot.com, where you can follow her writings. Thank you so much, Sherry. I had so much fun talking to you.
Thank you so much, Pat, for having me.
We'll be right back after this break.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
This is the TogiNet Radio Network, radio with a cutting edge.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Our show is brought to you by the people who make things beautiful, Moda Fabrics. You can visit their site with all kinds of fun stuff at modafabrics.com or Moda Bake Shop. I am very happy to have Linda Augsburg on, who is the executive editor of American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine and a longtime friend of mine. Hi, Linda. How are you?
Hi, Pat. Fine. How are you?
I am so happy to talk to you. Like 15 minutes of uninterrupted chat about quilting. Yay.
Yay.
This year, we're going to talk a little bit about the magazines, what's going on, since you're going to tell us what's happening for 2015. What is the theme for the year? Because you usually have one. I assume you do again.
We do. It's an overarching theme, and we actually start discussing it well before, of course, the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. And this year's theme is make. So, you know, as you know, make can mean a lot of things. It can mean, you know, to bring something into being, as we do when we make quilts. Or it can mean to cause something to happen, like, you know, well, in my case, making a mess normally. So, and then it can also mean to formulate, as in making plans, which I know we all do as quilters. Mm-hmm. So this year we're making our decisions and choices so that we can inspire readers to make 2015 their best year yet. We're hoping to make quilting easier, make learning new skills more achievable, make more time to quilt, make confident color choices, and make the most of their sewing space. All those different uses of the word make. And, of course, we want to provide great projects and quilts so that they can make that they can make for themselves and their friends and their family. So our word is make.
Oh, you know, that's a fantastic word. A fantastic word. One of the things, you have some really cool stuff that you're doing with the word make. And I know that you filmed my buddy Kimberly Imo's studio. What else have you done along those lines?
We did, and we shot Kimberly's studio for the February 2015 issue of American Patchwork and Quilting, which is on newsstands now. Went on to sale in December, so a lot of people missed it because they were, you know, so frantically trying to get ready for the holidays. So go look for it now because it focuses on making space and getting organized. So Kimberly has such a great custom studio. She spent a ton of time thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And so that's great, but for those readers who, you know, maybe don't have the time, the money, the space really to invest in that kind of space. We also went to Jill Mead's Mead's sewing studio. She's, you know, one of our editors here. Mm-hmm. And between her studio and our staff, we talked about some real life solutions for those storage and organizational needs. Because this is the time of year that we're all thinking, you know, I really have to get it together. So we did all of that. Then also, since I moved in August, it was the perfect opportunity to show some ideas that I used to set up my sewing space kind of from the ground up. And in a few months, once the magazine's off sale, there'll even be a slideshow that will include some, I'm sorry to say, embarrassing before pictures, so you can really see the difference. Nothing is more humbling than putting all of your fabric in one big pile on the floor. And sadly, I had it in one big pile several times. Because it wasn't so good.
And moving like that, that's a big thing you had to go through, Linda.
It is. Well, and it was just, I mean, it was fun because I was lucky enough to have had a pretty good space before, but I really lucked into a really great space, but I'm a renter, so I didn't want to do anything that was going to be installed. You know, I really wanted to make things that I could take with me when I move, because at some point we're going to either, you know, build or buy or something. So I thought, you know, I don't want to have stuff that's great for this location and doesn't work anywhere else. So I used a lot of kind of more portable solutions. And we know a lot of people, you know, like I said, have that problem of how do I organize this space? So in giving different options at different price points, we tried to really meet the need for all the readers. You know, we've got some people here who only have like a drawer to store their supplies in. So they even offered some great tips.
Yeah. Oh, good, 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 good. The other new feature that I am so excited about is the series you're doing with Jean Wells through the year. Can you tell me about that?
Yes. Well, in December, we featured her as a profile, and we announced at that time that we were going to have a new feature all year long called Peace and Play.
And it's kind of a great way for you to try something new and experiment with innovative techniques and also play with color. And what we love about it is that the projects we're doing a pincushion each issue and then also something else. But even the something else isn't a big project. Mm-hmm. So it's really something you can easily play along with us. And in fact, we've set up a hashtag called APQ Learn Along so that quilters on Facebook and Instagram can share photos with us as well. And we're going to do some blog posts here, and Jean Wells and Stitching Post and her team are doing some blog posts also each time. And so the first one was freehand curved piecing. Mm. And just a fun, like I said, something that's a little out of the box. And if you haven't tried it before, we really go into detail of what you need to do so that you can really succeed at it.
You know, I want you to tell me a little bit about the front of the magazine, because, you know, people, when you change things up, I think it's always great to point that out, because sometimes people like flip through thinking, oh yeah, that's the same, but you've made some changes there.
We did. We changed the departments that are in the front. They used to be, you know, like a book department and things like that. We kind of did a more broad called Sew in the Know, S-E-W, Sew, and gives us a little more flexibility to feature some trends or some new fabric lines, do some social media buzz and some surveys, that kind of thing. And we did that in American Patchwork and Quilting. We also did it in Quilts and More, but we called it Stuff We Love. So it's mm-hmm. a great way to feature your books and products and other things, new trends we're seeing, that kind of thing. And just kind of, like I said, add a little flexibility, make it a little fresh. And, you know, as we all like to do a little updating, it was our little update.
You know, I also like that you feature some of the things that go on at the Facebook page and Instagram and mm-hmm. your Pinterest
and
boards.
The box, yes.
Yeah. So you show, yeah, there's always lots going on there. You can
yes. And one of the things we love is being able to take some of those podcast tips from all the folks who are on your show and be able to use them up throughout the year when it applies to a project. Because a lot of times, you know, maybe they missed that episode or it was been a while and now it really applies to what somebody's working on. And, oh, yeah, I should go re-listen to that again. So it's a great reminder.
Now, why don't you tell me a little bit about what's going on over at the Quilts and More magazine, because that one is always got, I think, 100 projects that I want to do.
We love Quilts and More as well. And I always think it's funny when we actually talk about the organization of it. There's the quilts and there's the and more.
Right.
And so one of the things that we're featuring, I don't know, I'm not even sure really where it falls in and whether it's a quilt or an and more, mm-hmm. is in spring we're introducing a column called One Block, Three Ways. So we take a fairly traditional block and show you what happens when you change the color placement. So you might, you know, just by looking at a two-color block and turning it into a three-color block can really change the look of the block, and it's the same seam lines. And I was really surprised. I think the first one we started with was a churn dash. And just to see what happens when you move those colors around, really interesting. And really, I would bet if you really looked in some old block research, you know, it would actually have a different name because mm-hmm, right. of the way the colors are placed. But it just really some fun play, and I think people are going to enjoy seeing those traditional blocks kind of played with a little bit.
Also, are you doing a sew-along?
We are. Quilts and More is doing a sew-along. They've got a mm-hmm. new project that's going to be in every issue called the Sew Easy Sampler, and it features four blocks. I love them too. And this is a nice, easy sampler. We mm-hmm. show it as a four-block quilt, mm-hmm. but you could certainly do three of each and make it a 12-block quilt if you wanted to. It's great for building new skills or for teaching a more experienced quilter something new. So some of us in the office are going to join in on that too. So we'll be blogging about that as the year passes. And we really, it's going to be a lot of fun. We started with a rail fence block, and some of the blocks get a little more innovative. You know, start with something that really is a good learning tool, and then let's see where it goes. So we're really excited about that, and it's fun. It's done in some modern solids, and it's a cool project. I think people will really enjoy it.
Yeah, I like sometimes seeing those in a solid because it gives you sort of the freedom of what fabric pattern you're looking at.
Yes, yes. That does make a big difference.
Yeah, it's a little cleaner. Sometimes you can go like, okay, I can put this in or put that in. Now, I love challenges, and I know just before we wrap up, you also have some things going on about challenges in the way of people, you know, having a challenge, a challenge of doing this, challenge of doing that. You know, sometimes they're good challenges, sometimes they're not.
There's always, well, a lot of us don't have a quilting friend. And I think that's the first thing. And social media has helped with that because there's groups you can go to and you know, the web, you can always search something. But sometimes you've got a problem and you just can't figure out why it's not working. So what we also added to Quilt Some More is a column called What Went Wrong.
Oh,
and we're going to address some common problems that, you know, that you can really see visually. Okay, here's what's, look at this block. Here's what went wrong. Mm-hmm. And we're always looking for suggestions. So if you really have a problem with something or you can't figure out why this happened to your block, do email us at apq@meredith.com. Again, that's apq@meredith.com. And put in the subject line, Quilts and More, What Went Wrong? And we're going to kind of address some of those common problems. The first one we cover is what happens when your quarter-inch seam allowance isn't accurate. And like I said, sometimes you just don't realize that, and then when you see it visually, you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So we hope that there'll be some aha moments for people, and what we expect is that, you know, that'll be the page you flag with a sticky note so that you can refer back to it later, you know, the little flag that says quarter-inch seam allowance, so that when it happens to you, you can easily find the solution.
That's right. Get out those sticky notes.
That's right.
Keep them handy. Linda, this has been so much fun. I'm so excited to be working with you again. We worked years ago, and you are now my new buddy again here at American Patchwork and Quilting Magazines. So I'm happy to.
It is so fun.
I know. It's so exciting. So I want to tell everybody where they can go. Go to allpeoplequilt.com, where there's a newsletter. You get the links to the Facebook, to the Instagram, to the Pinterest boards, the blog. So, Linda, good luck with getting all this kicked off for the year. Excited.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back right after the break.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I've taken a little trip down to Colonial Williamsburg. I live just north, about 3 hours, and there is a fabulous exhibit going on at the Art Museums of Colonial Williamsburg. And they've put a book out about some of the quilts here at the museum, and I asked to come down and speak with the curators, the two women who have put this together, who have written a book, written other books too. And so I have with me Linda Bumgartner and Kim Ivey. So thank you, Linda. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, thank you. It's great to have you here.
Kim, thanks for being here and inviting me and making time.
Well, it's our pleasure. We really enjoy showing the quilt collection to people, especially quilters.
I know, quilters. Well, I got a chance to see a dozen of the quilts that are in the book. You have those on exhibit. How long is the exhibit here?
The exhibit runs through 2015, so your listeners will have plenty of time to get here.
Right, down Colonial Williamsburg, which is just gorgeous. Right now it's
December, so the whole town is just decorated beautifully. We're going to talk a little bit about the quilts. Kim and Linda took me around first, but I want to find out, like, your background, what you've done. Kim, you told me you've been, I think you said you were 12 when you came to the museum to work.
Almost 12. I've actually been with the foundation since 1976.
Oh, wow.
I began as an interpreter out in the historic area when I was a student at the College of William & Mary. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm one of the curators of textiles here at Williamsburg, but I'm also the curator of historic interiors. Okay. And that means that I not only have the privilege of working with our textile collection, but I also have the opportunity to work with all of our collections in furnishing our exhibition buildings, our trade shops, and,
wow,
and buildings like that, oh, our visitors see.
Yeah, so when they go into an old building, you are part of what makes all the magic happen in there. So it looks like period.
Correct, like the Governor's Palace or the George Wythe House, for example.
Great, great. Linda, what is... You've also been with the museums a long time.
Yes. In fact, I started about the same time Kim did, except I started as one of the curators of textiles. Mm-hmm. And I have focused over the years on costumes,
wow,
the subject of a couple of books from the Colonial Williamsburg collection, and then turned my attention to the quilts when we had that opportunity.
Yeah. So all the gorgeous outfits, are you a part of that now too at the Colonial Williamsburg, where you see the ladies or the men dressed up?
I curate the antique costumes that are used as documents by the department that makes all of those wonderful reproductions for people to wear.
Okay. So how many quilts are in the museum total?
Well, we have over 300 quilts in the collection. Now, that includes not only our American quilts, which we were looking at with you earlier, but also our English quilts and quilts from other countries, and, of course, from four centuries.
Right, from four centuries, like the book. So, Linda, why did you guys decide to write this book?
We decided to write the book because Kim and I have been aware for years that we have stupendous collections here. We have a great quilt collection that needed to be made more available to our public, and we just suggested that the book would be a wonderful idea, and then we got some very generous funding by our donors, Mary and Clint Gilliland, who made all of it possible.
Oh, and it's a fantastic book.
Thank you.
Beautifully done. Gorgeous photography. Very, very extraordinary. And 12, a dozen of the quilts, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a dozen of the quilts are in this exhibit. And they are also in the book.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I want you to tell me, we walked through them, and some of them just have, like, fantastic stories. You did a great job of, like, pairing up quilts, and I thought we could just talk a couple of those pairings so people get an idea of, you know, how you think about quilts. And I thought we'd start with the two applique ones that were the sisters.
Okay,
so
certainly.
That was Kim's, you're going to share a little bit about that.
Well, I worked with those two quilts when they came into the collection and then wrote about them for the book. First, everyone should know that the small quilt exhibit that's up right now features about 12 quilts from the collection, and as you said, they are also in the book, and they represent the diversity of the entire collection of American quilts.
Yeah.
So you're seeing various techniques and various cultures and wonderful patterns.
Mm-hmm.
The two that you are asking about right now are two beautiful Pennsylvania applique quilts, a floral and wreath design on one, and bright, brilliant reds and greens that have just not faded.
Yeah.
The other is in pinks and yellows, and it's a tulip pattern, also equally beautiful and unfaded. And they were made by two sisters, Christiane Rausch and Anne Margaret Rausch. And the quilts descended through the family with the story that the sisters had made them for their two nephews.
Yeah.
When we did the research, we found that the two nephews were the children of the two quilt maker sisters' younger sister.
Mm-hmm.
And she had recently lost her husband, and so she's widowed, and we just feel like these two spinster sisters were making these quilts as a way of supporting their younger sister in grief.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the two nephews never used the quilts. They are just so beautifully...
They're pristine.
Yes. That's yes. And they descended to the two nephews... Actually, her the two nephews' sister, and then through the family, and eventually were given to us as a great gift.
And they're dated 1849 in stitching right on the front.
Red cross stitches.
And was that common? You know, like a lot of the quilt makers now, we put a label on the back, but the older quilts, you often find the maker stitching on the front, their name. Is that
sometimes the name is in ink, sometimes it's stitched.
Like a painting, almost.
Yeah. But not as often as we'd like.
As you'd like, right? Yeah, right.
We only wish get everyone would sign them.
Right.
We get to see those. Those are great. Now, when we were upstairs, what I asked about the patterns, because back then, patterns weren't as plentiful as they are today. I mean, you know, so it's easy to get a pattern for a quilt. But back then, what did they do? Did they make their own? Did they have patterns they traded?
Sometimes the patterns were drawn by a talented quilter or an artist in the local community. We have some evidence for that, especially in women's diaries. You know, I went and drew a flower for my friend's quilt, a reference like that. In other cases, women would fold paper or the textile and cut like a snowflake almost, that effect, and make a pattern. And in other cases, Kim can tell you that patterns were available in some communities.
And we also know a professional, women working professionally, has milliners or perhaps selling in dry goods stores, and they would actually sell cutout applique pieces that a quilt maker could then buy and put together to make her own blocks for her quilt.
So they could buy kits.
In a sense,
in our terminology now. I want to buy a kit for pre-cuts.
Of course, this is by about 1850.
Right, right. Well, wow. I love the tulip one of those two, because it's a very unique, and it's also more pastel, which was really pretty. Let's do another set of them. I think the one that has the make-do with the old fabric and the new fabric.
What we did is in one exhibit case paired a bright pink wool quilt made about 1750, probably New Hampshire, beautiful whole cloth quilting, with a denim quilt made about 200 years later, about 1950s, made from cut up overalls and jeans, and you can still see the double seaming from the overalls. Right. You can see where someone splashed bleach on it. But essentially, that's a make-do, and it's a contrast with the various ways that people got their fabrics for quilts. Sometimes you buy brand-new fabrics. Sometimes you make do with old clothing, scraps left over.
And just like today with quilt makers, I mean, I think just on my internet group, somebody was asking, well, does anybody go buy shirts at the Goodwill and cut them up? And it's like, yep, they've probably been doing that forever,
they
right?
They have, yes.
Now, the new fabric. Did you have to be wealthy to have new fabric back in the 1800s? I mean, did you have to have some money? I mean, it was expensive.
I would say by the 1800s, textiles are getting a little bit less expensive, especially printed textiles. In the 1700s, quilting is quite rare because of the expense of the fabrics, and more people tended to use just blankets for warmth rather than cutting up a very expensive textile. So they get gradually more available as time passes.
Now, there was one of the pieces, the one that's on the in when we first walk in, is the bigger one that had the
large applique.
Yeah, the large applique. So Linda, when we first looked at it, you said maybe the sashing might have been curtains. And
it's possible. It has quite wide sashing that is a printed textile, and it's entirely possible, it would have been fashionable at the time, to have bed curtains to match the quilt.
So tell me about that quilt, Kim, because that's a Virginia quilt.
Yeah, a Virginia quilt from the south side of Virginia. Yeah. We know that it was used at a house called Berry Hill, a beautiful Gothic plantation home that still stands today.
Oh.
The quilt descended through the family until it was given to us several years ago. And it's this great transitional piece.
First of all, as you saw, it's huge.
It's very large. And in the center is this wonderful applique chintz, what I would call chintz work design. And a center medallion, and then it's framed by these smaller, about 12-inch size squares that consist of applique designs as well as piece stars. And then, as you mentioned, that beautiful sashing, blue printed right. sashing. It's a stunning piece.
Yeah, and the applique is all sort of more fine hand applique where it's all turned under.
Applique, yes.
Yeah, not the mm-hmm. decorative stitches mm-hmm. that some...
Right. No buttonhole stitches right. to hold it in place. It's right. turned under and very finely done.
Yeah. What's the back of that one? Do you remember?
It's not printed. It's just a plain cotton backing.
Was that common?
It's very common. I think yeah. most of our quilts are a plain mm-hmm. cotton backing.
Mm-hmm. Just because
of this period.
At least,
right.
of this period. The 19th
right.
century.
Yes, of this 19th
ones.
Century.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How about the one with the overalls?
The overalls has a wonderful reused backing. Talk yeah. about make do. It is fertilizer sacking that they washed the sack, opened it out, and pieced several sacks together to make the backing for the overall front quilt.
Right, right. Yeah. It's just amazing. Yeah, we have a little picture of the back because the quilts are behind glass, so we can't, you know, mm-hmm. get a white glove and flip right. it over right. like at the quilt show. So,
we do have a picture of the backing in the book as
right.
well.
Oh, in the book, well. Uh-huh. Perfect, perfect. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about quilt making and friendship all, you know, through the years. So this is American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll be right back.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
This is the TopiNet Radio Network, radio with a cutting edge.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos. Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
see what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I'm with curators Linda Bumgarten and Kim Ivey. So we're here at the Colonial Williamsburg chatting about their book, which is just fantastic. So when you're writing this book, you're finding the stories about the quilt makers. So not only are you documenting the quilts, but you're also documenting their stories. And I read through, you know, quite a few of the stories, and I saw this underlying theme of friendship that was going on. Did you know that going into the book? Did you sort of discover that as the two of you worked together? Because you've worked together a long time.
We have, actually. The story of friendship is also one of our working together so many years here at Colonial Williamsburg.
Working together well.
Yes, exactly. As we started gathering the quilts together, we found that each one had a story, but many of them had a story of several people working together. We knew that women got together to do quilting parties. Later, they were called quilting bees. Right. So we knew about that. But then the individual quilts started telling us stories about friendship. And I think Kim is a great one to talk about that, because she wrote in the book about several of the friendships.
What's one of the ones that you really like the story? Maybe you could just share one of the stories.
Oh, there's so many stories. It's so hard. It's so hard to choose. Actually, one of the themes I found, in addition to friendship, was sisterhood.
Ah.
Many of the quilts seem to have been created with a sister or for a sister. Mm-hmm. There's the Pigeon family quilt made in Virginia, where the bride-to-be is collecting quilt squares from her groom's family and from her husband-to-be's family and from her family. And they put the quilt, she finally puts the quilt together, and the center square is, of course, her sister's square, who she was very close to. There's just so many stories like that. The one I just told about the two spinster sisters making the quilt for their widowed younger sister.
One of the ones I read in there was, wasn't a sister one, but it was about the multiple makers. And it was the one that had a 12-year-old who was working on one of the quilts.
The From Your Friend quilt?
Yeah. And was that the one that they gave to the pastor? I was thinking of the one that they gave to the pastor.
Well, several were given to pastors.
Yes, actually.
Probably a lot of them. Okay, well, that was not a helpful hint, was it? Which one to the pastor? There. I wanted to write that one down. But maybe you can tell me, was it common for a 12-year-old and then adult ladies to all work on the same quilt?
It was not unheard of. There's one of the quilts that we feature in the book was made by a community, and when we did genealogy on the girls, we found that they ranged in age from about 12 up to 50s and 60s. Okay. So apparently, maybe the older women were teaching the younger girls to quilt, or the family got together and everyone pitched in.
Mm-hmm. And they also did a lot of signing then. This is, I think, the one. This is the one, because here's like a really simple block, and then there's very elaborate blocks.
You're referring to a quilt that was made by a group of women who were members of the Lee Street Baptist Church in Richmond. Okay. And there are a variety of ages on the represented by the quilt makers. It's album quilts block style, for those of you listening who can't see the picture I'm looking at right now. And it's a wonderful piece because it's an early...
almost like a sampler.
It's almost like a sampler. And you were also referring to quilt as you go.
Right.
These blocks were all finished entirely before they were put together.
Ah.
And so the edges were trimmed out. The blocks were quilted, and then they were all put together.
Yeah, was that common? I mean, because like quilted as you go, my mother-in-law learned to do that when she learned to quilt. And then it sort of like went away. And now it's got a resurgence because people don't want to put the big quilt in their little machine, you know, so block at a time is easier. But I had no idea they did that.
We have several examples of quilt as you go in our collection, one being this one from Richmond.
Wow.
And then there's another one that has Bible verses written in the center of each one, and that is made as separate sort of large blocks, mm-hmm. then edge sewn together.
Yeah.
And it dates about 1860 to 80. Yeah. The Richard one's a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. It's 1857. I suspect yeah. it's one of the earliest ones.
Wow. Now, on that one of the blocks is so, I mean, I would call this a very
almost like a daisy.
It's just
look.
A big yeah. daisy. Mm-hmm. It must be like a 20-inch daisy. I mean, this just doesn't have any detail. Would that be done by somebody younger, you think, or just?
I'm not really sure who did that block.
Yeah.
And it could very well have been done by someone younger. What I find one of the most interesting things about the quilt is that some of the quilt squares are quilted with hand stitching and others were quilted with a machine.
Oh,
pretty early for machine quilting, but
gonna show off that machine.
Yeah, exactly.
And I got a sewing machine.
Quilting, the quilting designs are really quite funny.
Yeah.
I mean, they're very static, as you can imagine.
So that was then presented to
the minister of the church. Yes.
So the book has been set up, you know, like we did upstairs, you had things grouped. That was for the exhibit part. But the book itself is set up a little bit differently. Maybe, Kim, you have the book open there. Okay. You can just tell me how the chapters are laid out.
Well, we have 21 chapters, and they begin with our earliest ones, our Indian quilts. And then we discuss various techniques. And so, for example, there might be paper template or early applique, later applique, pieced quilt, signature. Of course, we also talk about quilts from where they were produced. So we're looking at Amish quilts and Mennonite quilts. Mm-hmm. Make do yeah. was a great mm-hmm. chapter that Linda
yeah.
wrote. In writing my chapters, I realized that there were some quilts that stood out that needed to be pulled out of their chapter and put into a special chapter that we created called Meet the Maker.
Oh,
and so
okay.
that's where we look at four quilt makers and the number in their quilts. And, for example, each one of these quilt makers had made more than one quilt.
Okay. So when you pulled that out, then you just sort of have like the special feature chapter that talks
mm-hmm.
about them. So okay, I'm gonna ask you to just tell me briefly what might be your favorite, Linda, in there that you got to write about. I know it's so hard. I can't tell a favorite.
Well, each time I'm working on something, it's my new favorite. And right now I'm doing a lot of work on Amish quilts. Beyond what I did for this book, I'm drawing the quilting patterns to try to see if the textiles, the quilting itself can help us identify where they come from. I'm using a CAD drawing technique. So mm-hmm. I'd have to say right now the Amish are my favorite. But when I was working on Indian quilts, they were my favorite.
Okay. Now, Kim, are you going to say the same thing or do you have...
I do have a favorite.
Oh, okay. Way to go.
I have a couple of favorites, yeah. but probably my very favorite one is our Williamsburg quilt. Mm. We have so few objects that have survived from Williamsburg for various reasons and so few textiles. And so I think mine would be our Williamsburg applique and pieced and embroidered quilt.
Wow.
It was made by Mary Gault right here in the town, and it was made about 1790. So it's our earliest quilt, Virginia quilt in the collection as well. It's one of those beautiful center-framed on point applique chintz work pieces.
Now, there is one quilt before, there's one at the end that I want to talk about, but before we talk about that one, there was a white work that's actually in the exhibit, and white work is where, you know, there's no applique, it's all the stitching, and it's by hand, and people still do those, but they're not done as much right now in you know, everyday quilting for today, but that piece is so spectacular. Who wants to take that one?
I wrote about
okay.
that one, so
yay.
I'll take that
all
one.
All right, Linda.
This quilt is very heavily stuffed from the mm-hmm. back. The back was opened, stuffing pushed in from the back.
And we've talked about it probably was mostly cotton, like just little bits?
The whole quilt is cotton. Mm-hmm. The front is cotton. You could really put it in a whole cloth category because it's just one white cotton textile. But then the back, cotton batting was just the fibers were pushed in from the back. The design has a big spread eagle and a flag with daisy-like flowers as the stars.
As the stars, it's incredible.
And the eagle is holding the E Pluribus Unum banner in his beak. So although we don't know the quilt maker, we know she was skilled. We assume it was a she, and we know that she was probably quite patriotic. We think it was, you know, about the 1820 to 40 period.
And then all along the edge was, I mean, the detail is amazing. We stood and looked at it for a while. There was little, like, prairie points for the a contemporary term. I don't know if you called those little edges prairie point then.
Probably sawtooth.
Yeah. Because
sawtooth edge.
Yeah, so it was. So it hangs off. It's dimensional. It's not like a straight edge. And then there were tassels.
There was a tassel at the point of each little point and in the valley of each little point. So. Yeah. I haven't counted them, but at least 100 tassels on this.
Right.
And
just,
most of them original that have survived.
Just incredible. Well, let's talk about this one quilt at the back that really caught my attention. What caught my attention about it was two things. One is one of the applique blocks are scissors, a pair of scissors. That is the block. It's very much like what we might do today. And the other was from your friend. It's friend or friends?
Friend. From your friend.
From your friend. Big, bold text. You know, appliqued words. But how old is this quilt?
It says right on it, 1860.
Right.
Want to believe that.
One of the blocks has a triangle with about 2-inch letters saying 1860.
Mm-hmm. And the fabrics confirm that date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right, exactly.
So, was this piece something, when you look at it, you think, wow, it's got some everyday, like, things like today that we would, like, I'm thinking, or to you, was this pretty normal for that time frame?
It's an unusual quilt, really, in the sense that it combines some blocks that are repeats, that, you know, just a repeat of a triangular motif, and other blocks that are more pictorial. The scissors, it almost looks like she laid her scissors down on the fabric and traced around it and then made that as an applique. And it, we know the community it comes from in Connecticut, and some of the blocks are signed, and we've been able to find them in census records.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. I just think that sort of sums up the book. And you have it in the back.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of is the kind of the summary, and you have a very sweet story about one of the people from the museum who quilts with her sister.
Who helped us with the book, right?
Yeah, so this book is called 4 Centuries of Quilts, Colonial Williamsburg, and I am delighted to have come and had a tour with both of you. I appreciate that so much.
Well, we're happy to have you here. Thanks for coming.
Well, yeah. Thanks very much.
So we are going to wrap up the show. This is Pat Sloan for American Patchwork and Quilting's podcast. Visit us at allpeoplequilt.com. You can visit me, Pat Sloan, at patsloan.com, and we'll see you next week.
Reaching out from the heartland of the United States with quality programming, this is TokiNet Radio.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening.